Right, I reckon we need to go then.
Yeah.
Mm.
Let's do it. One, two, one, two, three, four.
Welcome to the Swingers Club, a social gathering for various golfers hosted by Joe, Matt and Sam.
Ladies and gents, welcome back. This is episode 26 of the Swingers Club. I'm Joe and I'm with Matt and Sam and we are all just about sweltering away in the heat. We are going to talk to you a lot tonight about the PGA Championship. It was all quite exciting in the end, wasn't it, chaps? How are you both?
Very good, thanks. Very good. Good weekend of golf, wasn't it, really?
I thought it was. Even I stayed up for like the first four or five holes.
It was good to have major championship golf back, I felt like. I mean, long time since Portrush, isn't it? I don't know.
13 months, isn't it? 13 months.
When you put it like that as well, I hadn't even considered that as a thing. That was the last major, wasn't it? That's incredible.
Yeah.
What were you thinking? Miss the crowds making a difference? I think you went from probably one of the best crowds you're going to get at a major to no crowd. I felt like there was a couple of moments. Like, for example, when Morikawa chipped in on 16, I think that got to a point where, I was just the crowd a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to say, I don't really feel like I noticed that much.
I think there was an up when Benny Ann got a hole in one, didn't he? And there was it's like deathly silence. And he was having to wait for a volunteer to almost like put his thumb up and as if say, like, he's gone in. And there was like no real celebration. There was no, like, you know, madness on the first tee and high fiving. And that felt a little bit weird as well.
Yeah, that hole in one was hilarious. It was just like one bloke just going, that.
Yeah. I think, to be honest, he was glad that he just didn't have to get his putter out.
Poor fella. So, cracking on with the most important stuff. Colin Morikawa, what a player Colin Morikawa is.
Mm, I'm a bit worried. A bit worried for sort of from a Ryder Cup standpoint. Sorry, I think he's going to be...
There's points there, aren't there?
There's going to be some points there, I think. He just looks so solid, doesn't he?
Oh, solid is the word. Solid is the word. He's like got no weakness, has he? He swings it pure.
Is it interesting? I'm like, not taking anything away from him as an individual or his performance, but do you know why I think, and this is probably going to lead into a good topic of debate anyway, but one of the reasons I think Europe always do so well in the Ryder Cup is because, like, the European players get on with each other. Like, could you imagine now, like, 11 US golfers sitting in the dressing room and Brooks Koepka walks in and he's
probably... How did I know this was heading towards another Holbrook dig at Brooks Koepka?
No, it's not.
As soon as he started.
But it's a valid point, right? So you've got 11 guys sitting there, Brooks Koepka, he walks into the dressing room and, like, everybody's head just hits the floor. They're looking at him because he's mugged them all off at some point in his career. And, you know, that's going to make for a toxic environment. And I think that's where, as a team, Europe comes together. But,
What do you reckon most unpopular bloke in the changing room, in the team room, is it Koepka or is it Bryson? Reed's a popular guy in the dressing room compared to them two, is he? Reed's got to be top on it.
If you're looking at a podium,
what about Matt Kuchar as well? They have got a lot of unlikable players.
I think people like Matt Kuchar.
Do they?
Well, in the team room, it's just like the media because he's a tight bastard.
Yeah, fair enough. Sorry, Matt, you were saying something about a podium.
I was going to say if it's a podium, like for me, like Brooks Koepka's number one, head and shoulders.
but this is your personal podium. This is not the team room podium.
No, he's definitely not number one for me. So Bryson rubs people up the wrong way, granted. But do you know what he doesn't do? He doesn't personally attack anybody. Patrick Reed just feels like he's a bit of a dickhead sometimes. But he doesn't personally attack anybody. Brooks Koepka has personally attacked Dustin Johnson now. He's personally attacked Bryson DeChambeau.
I don't think it was personal. I think most of it was probably a little bit of a tongue in cheek. Have we got the quote, by the way, for people that like know?
I haven't got Brooks's quote. I was all I've seen so far is McIlroy's defence of Dustin Johnson. What did he?
Yeah, so the essence of what he said was, you know, why should I be worried about Dustin Johnson? You know, he's only won one major kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was something like that. That's what came across. It was probably
words to that extent, wasn't it?
It was a little. That's kind of what he was sort of getting towards.
I think,
which didn't really age well, considering how he played on Sunday. But
yeah, and he's just, for someone who is so good, he doesn't have to be classless with his words, does he? That's what I think. I rate Brooks Koepka. Like, I still think he is maybe the best player in the world, but that is, it's just classless, and you don't need to say it. And especially as Rory completely backed up Johnson the day after and said, like, you're kind of picking on the wrong guy. He's won 21 times on tour, which is three more than you have.
Yeah. And also,
a bit of a weapon.
I think if you're trying to get into Dustin Johnson's head, like, I don't think a lot goes on inside his head, to be fair, in the first place.
Thinking that, yeah.
And it's like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's probably enough room to swing a cat in his head. And it's just a pointless exercise.
I don't know. Yeah. Remember we had Laurie on, and he was saying that when he shared with him in the Open that he was a lot smarter than what he thinks. Maybe it's an act. Maybe he said.
Look, my biggest issue with Brooks, right, is he's got bags and bags and bags of talent. Like, just go and let your golf do the talking. Do you need to be getting involved with some of the things that he, because he doesn't come out of it looking very good. Like, you look at social media over the last couple of days, and There's you can count on one hand the amount of people that say, actually, I like Brooks. I like the way he's carrying himself. I like the way he's saying them things. You know, I think he's a top guy. I think he's got this uber confidence that he's just kind of, he's now stepping over the line into arrogance, but he almost feels like, well, I've come this far with it. Like, shit, I better carry on with it.
Yeah, I think he genuinely believes, like, because he said before he doesn't really love golf and he's just good at it. I think he genuinely believes, like, he's a bit too cool for us all.
Yeah, well, he's final round.
I'd say there's like an element to that, really. He's trying to sort of try and pretend like he's like that guy at school that, like, really likes football but actually secretly loves golf sort of thing. And he don't tell everybody that he plays golf. But
That's exactly him. That's Bryson.
I don't know. I think when it comes to golf as well, like, it's good to have someone who's a bit more quotable, if that makes any sense. Like, some of the old, like, I mean, you could listen to 1,000 Tiger Woods press conferences and you wouldn't be able to make one interesting quote out of all of it. And obviously, this is not a dig on Tiger, because watching Tiger play is obviously all you need, really. But when it comes to, I just think it stuff like that. I mean, that made the final round a little bit more interesting to me.
Yeah.
So it's weird. It's weird that you say that, Sam. And it's not often that I disagree with you, but, like, for pure golf and for the twists and turns and for the quality of golf on display, like, I don't feel like we needed that from Brooks to make it interesting that Sunday. Like, the course was set up superbly. Colin Morikawa played absolute flawless on Sunday. And we should be talking about him first and the tee shot that he hit on 17, the chip in birdie, you know. But we're naturally drawn to talking about Brooks, and I think that takes away. And yeah, I don't think Brooks needs to do that to make it an interesting Sunday night, in my opinion. And just, it's not often that I disagree with you.
Just digressing slightly, I saw a pretty cool tweet one night over the weekend, and it was a question: if Brooks's career stopped now, has he achieved enough to be a Hall of Famer?
That's a tough one.
I don't know. He needs some padding around that, don't he? Like, he does. He needs to sort of. I mean, I think he needs to be a bit more of a sort of proven winner, if you know what I mean. It's not good enough just to say I don't really care about normal events, but, you know, you might as well still win them if you're good enough.
It's a difficult one, right? Because, like, we when you think of Hall of Famers, like, naturally for me, you think about Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, you think about Gary Player, you think about Arnold Palmer, you think about, you know, these guys that have won like multiple majors. And that's kind of like the benchmark that's been set for a Hall of Fame career. Like, you know, we might not have players that dominate for like those guys did, especially in majors. Like, he could win four majors and then that's it. He might never win one again. And he's had a fantastic career. But when it comes to kind of comparing it and does it make Hall of Fame, doesn't it make Hall of Fame? Like, it's so difficult to compare to what's already there. It's almost like you have to draw the line under the in the sand again. You've got
to... I saw a quote somewhere that, like, I think it's around 20 wins and a major gets you a Hall of Fame career. That's PGA Tour, by the way. So, like, does his four majors, does that then
outweigh the 20?
Well, how many? I mean, is it seven PGA Tour events he's won or something like that before the majors?
Yeah. Well, yeah, about that.
So,
and then you've got players that have won, you know, multiple PGA Tour events and have near misses in majors. Like, could you argue that, you know, they've had a more successful career? Like, is success only judged on majors or?
I don't think you can be in a Hall of Fame without a major.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, unless you win literally like 30 events or something like that.
Well, like maybe. Monty, for example.
Yeah, but he only won like... Is Monty in the Hall of Fame? Who gives a shit about Hall of Fame, by the way? Where did this come from?
It's such an American thing.
I'm not really...
Hall
of Fame.
Hall of Fame.
I'll move on. You know, our conversations ongoing that the world rankings are always really interesting. Like, you see people pop up in places you didn't. No, Colin Morikawa is now fifth in the world.
Mm. Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's undeserving of it, but wow, how quick's that?
Yeah. So I've got some, this is purely for Sam, it's just a couple of Morikawa stats, because he loves a stat and I thought he might come prepared.
I do love a stat.
You know, so Morikawa's now had as many missed cuts in his professional career as what he's won majors.
Yeah. Nice.
Nice. You like that one? And there was another one that actually, it's, you know, it's very easy to forget that this guy was an amateur 14 months ago. So in his first year as a professional, or in his first year and a couple of months, any guesses on how much his on-course earnings are?
On-course
earnings.
In 14 months?
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be like $11 million or something like that.
No, not that much.
Oh, I was going to go slightly higher. I was going to say like 13, 14. I was basically like $1 million a month.
So he's made, so considering he's done okay, but $6.8 million. So it's not bad for a year's work, is it?
Not bad work if you can get it, isn't
you
it?
Know, and also, go let's think back. It wasn't too long ago. It was, what, 4 or 5 weeks ago that he had a putt to win in a play, or he was in a playoff, wasn't he? And he had that, I think he had a putt to win in regulation that he missed, and then he had a putt lip out in a playoff in an event that he lost.
Yeah, to Justin Thomas.
Yes, that's right, to Justin Thomas. And at that point, you think, how is that going to dent his confidence going forward? Because yeah, and also that was just off the back of his first missed cut. You know, there was a big hoo-ha around all the, you know, his 21 events without a missed cut, and, you know, getting the comparisons to Tiger. Then he misses a cut, comes back, then loses in the playoff, and you think, wow, like, how's this guy going to cope with this? And then, like, the week later, he wins his first PGA Tour event, and then, you know, fast forward another few weeks and...
Second PGA Tour event, wasn't it?
Second PGA Tour event. And then fast forward it, you know, a few more weeks, and he's a major champion. The way he done it as well was brilliant. That tee shot. Is it 16, 17?
What, you said the drivable par 4?
Yeah.
Yeah, was that 15?
15 or 16. I should know. I stayed up and watched it all. I watched it.
Yeah, like the only one out of all of us.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no good asking me what happened past the back nine.
Mm. No, well done. I don't know if I'm proud of you or not for staying up that whole time. That was
like... do you know what? I think I tried to stay up on the Saturday night and I couldn't. But I think it was a combination of the fact that we'd waited 13 months for a major. And it was interesting. It was good fun, you know. It always makes a difference for me when you've got a bit of European interest. And Paul Casey gave it a good run. And what a class act that guy is as well, by the way. Post-round interview afterwards, was just the way he carries himself. I never used to like him. I always thought he was a bit of an arrogant knob. But the last few years, he's really grown on me, Paul Casey, to be honest. So I managed to stay up and watch it all, and it was brilliant. I loved it, and I can't wait for the next one.
Nice.
Very good. Very good.
I've got a slightly different kind of tangent here, really. Obviously, everybody's talking about being a bomber and all that kind of stuff. And obviously, Morikawa is not necessarily a bomber, but he led the putting stats this week, as did Bryson when he won a couple of weeks ago. And it seems to be such an unpublicized stat in golf to me at the moment, where people seem to totally underestimate that you still need to be a ridiculously good putter to do well at that level. And you think it's just kind of not really been overly marketed, I think, in the last few years.
Do you think?
Hmm.
People talk about strokes gained putting more than they talk about strokes gained anything else.
You reckon?
I think there's an element of kind of golf marketing that comes into this, just general, both at, you know, you watch any tour event and what do people want to talk about? This guy's got this new driver in the bag. This guy's got that new driver in the bag. This guy's beefed up and he's carrying the ball X amount of thousands of yards off the tee. And, you know, there's never any talk about. One time you hear people talk about putter, and that's when Tiger changes his putter.
Yeah,
that's the only time. I just think that's golf marketing. You know, I think it's sexy to hit 300-yard drives, and it's not sexy to hole, you know, 100% of putts from inside 10 foot.
Pretty sexy to me, that is. I'd love to.
I mean, you know, but then you're an absolute player, and you know what it takes.
An absolute player.
Absolute.
Know what you mean. I think you are right. I think it's ever since Mark Brody brought out his kind of research, which all of a sudden made putting seem a little bit obsolete compared to the rest of the game, that the kind of the people in golf, the influencers in golf, don't talk about putting anymore. But you are right, of course it's important, and if you goes without saying.
Again, we talk about putting when someone's putting shit. So we'll talk about Rory McIlroy's putting. For as good as he might be off the tee when he's on his game, we'll talk about his putting, because actually, is his putting where it needs to be? Probably not. And actually, I reckon that's more down to his iron play and his wedge play. And that's something that Morikawa does have, right? He's throwing darts with six irons and, you know, he's just... And, you know, that's what people talk about, is being an unreal ball striker.
And he is short, by the way.
So what are we saying then? Is are putting stats underappreciated, or you think they're appreciated just enough?
Just enough.
I don't know. I do think you make a good point. But then I wouldn't want to take away the appreciation of any of the longer stuff just to add a bit more appreciated. But I'm going to say just enough as well.
Cool. No, it's just one of those, because to win at that level, you have to do it all, don't you? No, that's the thing.
And that is ultimately it, isn't it? That's what it comes down to. You have to be absolutely awesome at everything.
So if someone's winning the tournament, it's quite often that they're, you know, it seems to be that they'll be leading, they'll either be leaving, proximity to hole, in regulation, or they'll be leading putting, or they'll be leading the off the tee stats. You've got to do one thing exceptionally well for that week, and then kind of build the rest of your game around it, almost. You know, you're not very often winning everything, are you?
Yeah.
You do, no. You do well. You do something extraordinarily well, and then everything else is solid.
Yeah. That's agreed. The key, you know, because everything, obviously, everything links into itself. You know, the longer hitters have probably got a better proximity to hole because they're hitting wedges rather than seven irons. You know, that doesn't, and then because of that, they're probably having less putts on paper, but it doesn't mean that they're putting really, really well. It just means that they're putting the ball closer. And I think you make a good point, Sam. Actually, this time I will agree with you. You know, head and shoulders. If you're head and shoulders in one of those, you're more than likely going to be in and around.
Yeah.
Also, one other thing on this week, big shout out to Jon Rahm making it back up to number one in the world. In what is the crazy merry-go-round of the world golf rankings?
Can I do my stat again?
Favorite.
Do your stat.
If he stays there until 2033, he's still
going. Favorite moment. About... Favorite moment of the JT number one era.
Ooh. That is a tough one.
When he
Holbrooks has got to be Brooks's meltdown, surely.
Yeah, Brooks's meltdown. But actually, when JT blasphemed live on TV because he was the old hot mic.
They're picking up some language, aren't they?
Very, very fruity. Very fruity.
that's his best number one moment.
Oh, that's what he'll be remembered for.
it's so clear. It's so clear as well. It's so funny how the commentators they just sort of paper over it, don't they? They're just like,
yeah. Well, what else can you do?
Yeah. Do you know? I wish they'd stop apologising for it though. Like, is anybody really that bothered? Like, how many complaints do you think they got from golf fans because JT dropped the F-bomb?
Probably loads.
What I love though, so the other day, right? So there was, I knew that there was one coming up. It was in the European tour, and I knew that there was, it was Sam Horsfield actually.
Yes.
And I watched it real time, and then I just, like, when I was eating my breakfast, I just flicked the TV on, and like, it was still on. So, and it was basically at the same point, like in the highlights. And Sky can't be that bothered because it's in the highlights and it's still as clear as anything as what it was in live. So they've literally not bothered. So there you go. Sky can't be that bothered.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, good point. Also, I love talking about the rankings because it fascinates me how it works. How did Bryson DeChambeau manage to come tied fourth this week in a major and drop a place?
A lot of it may be because... I'm not sure if it's still the same way. This is total speculation. It used to be, and this is how they used to do the amateur world rankings as well. It's done on like a 12-month system. He may have had a good week this time last year. So the points for that event would then slid out. And then therefore, he could be essentially losing points on his ranking because of that 12-month rotation system.
I don't think it is done like that, but
also don't also forget. So yes, Bryson has dropped down, but he's only dropped down one place, and in that time, Colin Morikawa has jumped from 12th to 5th.
Yeah.
So in theory, he's pushed Webb Simpson down. You'll be pleased to know Brooks Koepka down to 7th in the world average. Chopper. He was a chopper. Anyway, where are we going? Where are we going next? This podcast a little bit all over the place, but it's good.
It's a tidal wave of emotion.
I'd like to. So we come back to picks. Let's just sack picks off for this week. Let's talk about. I really, really want to talk to you guys about.
You sound like you're just trying to make something up off the top of your head. You want to talk about because you don't want to talk about.
No,
picks. That's what you said.
No, I want to talk about feelings. I want to talk about anything but picks. No, I want to talk about Jordan Spieth. About Jordan Spieth, and I want to talk about Rory McIlroy, and not those guys in particular, although they're good examples, but. You know, here's guys, at some point, we was talking about Rory McIlroy, we was talking about Jordan Spieth, the same way that today the golf media and the golf world, you know, quite fickle in a sense, are talking about Colin Morikawa. How many majors is this guy going to win? How many years is he going to go on to dominate for? And these are guys that were, at one point, at the pinnacle of the game. What happens for those guys to now be so far off, not saying the pace that they should be, but their own, you know, like they raised their own bar. Jordan Spieth in particular, like Rory had actually played pretty well in the run-up to lockdown. But I look at someone like Jordan Spieth and like, as far as his ability is concerned, he's pretty much fallen off the spectrum for what he's capable of. You know, he's outside the top 50 in the world. Like, why does that happen to someone like him?
Yeah, good question.
You go, Mike.
Well, I'm going to let you go first based on the kind of fact that I wasn't not listening, but I dropped the bollock a little bit and remembered that I'd forgotten to get a guest pick. So whilst Matt was talking, I was just quickly messaging the person who asked for a guest pick this week. Sam, if you can go first, that'd be great. And I'll get the gist, of what you're saying and just like kind of agree.
I think one of the things with Spieth was, obviously he's a really good iron player, which I think was kind of an underrated part of his game. But when he had that like ridiculous year when he was winning majors, he won like great chance to win three in a row and all the rest of it, and we got to world number one. It just, a lot of the stats were like saying that he was holing like ridiculous amount of putts from like 15 to 25 feet, which, and it was like so much better. Like, he was holding like, it was like nearly, it wasn't like double, but it was like a time and a half.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, when people were looking at it, they were sort of saying like, it seemed like a bit of an unsustainable stat.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say, not sustainable, yeah.
Which basically has kind of regressed the field, but he's got the wide ball off the tee, hasn't he, at the moment? Does kind of happen. You lose constant confidence with a certain club and you know it. It's, the game is so mental, isn't it, really?
Well, I was just about to say, so much of it has to be mental. It can't just be the putting thing, because he's not like dropped from, what was his best world ranking? He didn't get to number one, did he?
I don't know if he did. I'm not sure.
But certainly was top three.
He must have done, because he nearly won three majors in a row. So he won two and then...
Yeah, well, maybe he did then. But all of a sudden, then he found himself outside the top
60. He was number one in the world at one point back in 2015.
So it is a hell of a regression, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking at his best performances and career. You know, he was first and... He was first in the world in like 2015, and he was still second in the world in 2017. So from that point onwards, he's then just tumbled 5th, 6th, 8th, 10th, 14th, 20th, 30th, 40th, 50th, 61st, 62nd. Like, you know, it's...
I don't know. I do just think like...
Is it a case of like, well, that's just golf. You know, it's a difficult game to master. And, you know, again, because we saw one particular player dominate for such a long period of time, we naturally think that every player comes along that has a good year or two. We think that naturally that's going to happen the same as what happened with Tiger Woods. Does Tiger play an effect on the... like what we perceive to be somebody that's just going through a hot spell, or is, you know, like, because I naturally look at that, you know, like as golf at one point, Jason Day got to world number one, he won his first major, and then bang, he's going to win loads. DJ won his first major, now he's got the monkey off his back, bang, he's going to win loads and he's going to dominate. Then Rory's winning majors and he's going to be the player to dominate. Then Jordan Spieth, now then Brooks Koepka, you know, now Colin Morikawa, you know, like, do we naturally, is it just golf is desperate for another Tiger Woods that we kind of build these guys up and actually it's just not going to happen?
Do you know, I genuinely think that is such a fabulous point and made really quite eloquently.
Thank you, Joseph.
quite all right.
Yeah, I can't see anybody getting to the point where they're winning like 15, 16 majors anymore, do you? I mean, that's just fine. I find that so hard to kind of imagine at the moment.
But like Matt says, though, is it, I think it is partly us as golfers and the media building up these guys because we are crying out for another Tiger. Because what's happened to Jordan Spieth isn't actually as unusual as we're perceiving it to be now, him dropping from 1 to like 60th in the world, because it did happen to Jason Day as well. And you can put that down to injury to a point. But then it's happened to loads of people. That basically happened to Lee Westwood.
Yeah.
He like when he was in his pomp and all of a sudden he's like outside top 100.
Yeah.
I think it is just one of those games where you can lose form for a bit and then that bit turns into 18 months.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're nowhere near again.
You know, I look down the you look down the world rankings and like there's certain players that jump out to me. You know, it wasn't that long ago that Francesco Molinari won at Wentworth, won the Open, you know, won five out of five at the Ryder Cup, and bang, this guy's going to dominate because he's picked up extra distance off the tee. Look at him now, you know, just inside the top 50 in the world.
Yeah, Luke Donald was world number one.
Yes.
I think it just happens to these guys.
To be honest, there does seem to be like quite often like a reoccurring theme with guys that chase distance. I think some people like when you get to that level, like it's difficult. Like we sort of almost goes back to the point we were talking about, like being exceptional at one thing, kind of building your game around it a little bit. Like there's once you get to being a PGA Tour worthy player, like there's only, you know, there's, I think there's only so much speed or whatever that you can actually realistically gain before you sacrifice something.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of those times it's people that are like, you know, it's a bit like Martin Keimer, isn't it? Like chasing, you know, trying to chase the draw for Augusta. And now, you know,
what, by the way, Martin Keimer, another great example.
Exactly. And, you know, what is he shot like five? He shot five under first round and shot 81 and missed the cut.
Yeah.
It's like unbelievable. It's one I do find interesting. I got into golf kind of after the Tiger Woods era, I'll be honest. Like, so I've always been a big Rory McIlroy fan, and he's somebody that frustrates the living daylights out of me, because I know that when he's at his best, I genuinely believe he's pound for pound is the best player in the world. But we don't see his best now. You know, we don't. And even if there's weeks where he does play well, like, I think he plays well because he's that good. He can turn up with his B game some weeks and kind of scrape a top 10. But let's face it, you know, this is a guy who hasn't won a major now for, what, 5-6 years?
Yeah. As long as that?
Yeah, yeah. I think 2015, was it? 2015 was his last. It is a long time. It's a long time.
I think one thing as well, I mean, this may be more, this could potentially be a question for Joe, really, but Matt might have some input. I imagine he would. But there's, like, obviously, Spieth is, you know, a lot of guys on tour, they kind of obviously, you've obviously got to essentially the pinnacle of the game. And you talk about Tiger's maybe the best example for this. So you get to number one in the world, like when he was working with Butch Harmon and that, and then kind of decides to change and go elsewhere, and that obviously Spieth's not actually done that, has he? Like he's, and Rory's a good example to where he's kept the same swing coach pretty much all the way through, but Spieth has as well. And you kind of look at it and think, what would be your opinion on guys that like kind of tend to hop from coach to coach? Do you think once you get to that point?
Just think if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like, I always thought like Tiger's move away from Butch Harmon was the most bizarre thing in the world. And I was kind of, funny enough, I was weirdly thinking about that when we were talking about some of the other things earlier, because I think like the Luke Donald thing, like chasing the distance with it ain't broke, don't fix it. Because he was world number one, and Martin Keimer did the same thing, decided he wanted to hit a draw all the other way around when he was world number one and suddenly slipped away. I think just if you've got a winning formula, people need to stick with it. So, like, Rory, for example, he's stuck with the same swing coach. And he's absolutely right to, because he swings it like one of the best in the world and arguably the best in the world. You know, you could argue he maybe needs to see someone different about his maybe wedge play and putting.
To be fair, he has done that as well. He's hopped from a couple of different coaches when it comes to putting, hasn't he?
He saw Phil Kenyon for his putting, didn't he?
Yeah, and he's seen Dave Stockton, and he's now seen Brad Faxon, I think.
Yeah, he could putt.
So is that too many?
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's like a similar sort of, I think there's a fine line. Like when you look at Tiger, and like even though he was like, was it like 20 when he was like 2001 was essentially like one of the most like perfect years of golf ever. And it's like, is that what kind of made Tiger that good? Was the fact that he felt that there was something better? Do you know what I mean? Like he was essentially not really satisfied. That he then felt, right, I'm going to change this. I'm going to go see someone else. Maybe. Even though, you know, even though really, it's probably not potentially done him any, you know, it didn't really do him any favours. He probably, I'd imagine, I'd love, it's obviously pure speculation, but I reckon obviously he'd be, have, I reckon he'd have more majors than he did, than he would now if he'd have stuck with Butch the whole way through.
Maybe. Yeah, I think I agree with that.
It's interesting.
How did we get here, by the way? This is
I don't know. I've waited long enough to do these picks and talk about picks.
Because so. I was asking about Jordan Spieth from Rory McIlroy.
Oh,
right.
Yeah. But then obviously, say you look at Spieth now, right? So do you think potentially it's now time for Spieth to see somebody else? Because, do you know what I mean? He's, might
I still think it would be slightly course. Too soon. I still think it would be slightly too soon. I think his issues are more mental than they are technical.
I think I probably agree.
How comes we sit here and we can reel off the names of swing coach A, swing coach B, and putting coach A and putting coach B, but in this particular sport we can't sit and talk about mental coach A or
I think we
mental
can
mental coach B,
but you've got to imagine they're all doing that, like. They are all doing it. There's something. Some people's kind of issues lie deeper, don't they?
Yeah.
And I can imagine being mental coach to Brooks Koepka would be easy because he's already there, isn't he? Like you don't need him going out more confident. But for Jordan Spieth, he might have kind of underlying demons we don't know about.
Yeah. True story.
Can we do picks now?
Yes, All right, let's do picks. God.
Oh, double. By the way, I feel like we've done the European Tour a bit of a disservice for not even mentioning the English Championship. And congratulations to Andy Sullivan.
Smashed that, by the way.
Yeah. So that was really good. And well done to Hanbury Manor.
27 unders, pretty useful, wasn't it?
Yeah. For anybody that hasn't seen it as well, right, there's also worth looking at, we talk about tee shots on par fours. So the opening hole at Hanbury Manor is like a downhill par four. And I think it was Saturday, Andy Sullivan hit his driver closer to the hole than what Morikawa did last Sunday night, by the way. So it was a tapping eagle on the first hole. But if you haven't seen it as well, what the European Tour are doing at the moment, and it's a lovely touch where you can't have fans and spectators and a lot of people's families are not going. Most weeks at the moment, they've had iPads off the back of the 18th green on the Sunday. And when, you know, whoever's won the tournament, they've got their family or their friends or whatever the case may be on like a FaceTime to be there to congratulate the players. It's a really, really lovely touch. But it was absolute golden. So it's Andy Sullivan's stepdaughter. I'd say she's probably 6 or 7. Literally just popped out. So it was like Andy Sullivan's chatting to his missus and his stepdaughter just popped over his missus' like, right shoulder on the screen and went, "We're going to get loads of bottles of beer and shake it up and spray it on you when you get back." It was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, that's class. I love that. Yeah brilliant. And to be fair, I remember when we first talked, when they first announced that Hanbury Manor were having a European Tour event, Sam did say that someone's gonna go low there, and he was right. So well done, Sam. And talking about Sam and great predictions,
yeah, go
picks
on.
Picks this week. Your prediction was equally as good as mine, and now we're about to have a row with Holbrook, but I like the whole voting system that we tend to have, and I feel like we're going to come out on top here. Because we agreed that whoever won picks in majors would get double points. You and I both won because our players both come tied fourth in Matt Wolff and Scotty Scheffler. Do you want to quickly put your case together, Matthew? Or
I just don't think that... I don't think that you can have, on a double points week, I don't think you can have two winners.
Even though JC and I were both winners. If your pick so happened to get anywhere near our picks, I'd happily give you 2 points. But this week, I'm afraid. What do you think, Jeff? I mean, double points.
Well, what do you think, Joe? That's like asking like a bloody... That's like asking me if I want to go and play golf. You know what the answer is going to be.
Well, I mean, I've actually already written down the points in my book, so there's no need to say what Brilliant. I think.
What's the point of even having this conversation? Let's just move on.
genuine sulk.
Matthew, we can put it to a vote if you want.
No, look. You guys need the points more than me, so let's do it and move on.
I'll tell you what, you take the European tour away from Holbrooke and he just got
just
no
crumbles,
idea.
Just
no, doesn't know a thing. Actually doesn't know a thing about golf.
I'll tell you what, Holbrooke reckons I need the points more than him. If I win this week, I go level with him.
I don't even know how that happens. Like,
oh, I do, because I got 3 points in the last 2 weeks.
Don't even know how that happens. Also, I'm just looking at the... So, like, last week, I've swept that under the carpet. I put that down as a bad experience. I'm looking for my pick in the field, and I can't see him.
Oh, no, this is going to be wonderful.
This is, like, honestly, this is...
Well, I tell you what. Sam, are you going first again?
Well, as resident loser of picks.
Well, you've overtaken the guests, by the way.
That's all right, that's a start. Can we talk about Scottie Scheffler, how much of an inspirational pick that was for a second? I mean, who's even heard of Scottie Scheffler for a start?
That was a very good pick.
Very good pick.
So we're doing picks again. So, okay, cool.
So we're doing picks again.
Celtic Manor, aren't they, this week?
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what, as I'm going first, I'm having Andy Sullivan then.
Oh, fuck's sake.
He seems to be in pretty good form, I think. 27 under. He's a streaky player as well. I remember he won a couple of times in a couple of weeks on European Tour a few years ago. So, fingers crossed, he might do the same.
Might get
another double points, because didn't we say double points if you pick a winner? It's got to be at least double points if you pick a winner.
I'm sure you're just making these up now.
Well, he's not won the event yet.
Well, let's cross that bridge when we come to it, don't we?
Oh. All right. Go on, Matt. As you haven't got any... Or are you still looking down the field? Do you want me to go?
No, you've got to come back from, I'm afraid.
All right, cool.
He's going to have to end up with, Arjun Atwell or someone like that at this rate.
I'll get one, but there was one that I wanted that... I wanted Rasmus Højgaard, and I don't know why he's not in the field, because his brother Nikolai is playing.
We'll pick him then instead. Him then.
No, because I don't think Nikolai is as good.
Love to see Nikolai Højgaard.
Yeah, he'll probably win. He'll probably win now, but I've got my pick anyway. So go on, Joe. You go.
All right, I'll go, because you know I'm doing a little bit here, because I can't have Andy Sullivan, who was my first pick. I'm showboating a little bit, because I'm a bit confident with our picks at the moment. And by showboating, I'm straying away from the European Tour.
Oh, yeah.
And looking at the Wyndham Championship, where I think JT Poston is looking like the man. He won the event last year.
Is that because he's the only person in the field that you've heard of?
No, I ain't heard of him, mate. But he won the event last year, made the cut this week at the PGA, so he's obviously playing all right. Obviously likes the golf course. Obviously going to do well.
All right, JT. You know, it's
a different course this year.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it's a different. It's a new venue.
No, it's not. They've moved three tees.
I'm now caught in two minds, because you just know that Nikolai Højgaard is going to have an absolute stormer this week, and I don't know whether to go with Nikolai Højgaard. It's a long hitters golf course, isn't it, 2010? I feel like you need to be a fairly big boy. There's a lot of carries over water and stuff. I'm going to go with Adrian Ortegi. He actually came second last week to Andy Sullivan.
He did.
And he's going to be my guy. What I will say to people is look out for Wilco Nine Niner Bar. you'd never heard of him before.
He's a South African guy that was going all right this week.
Yeah, and apparently this guy, so he was playing with Jordan Smith. And, I mean, Jordan Smith is not renowned for being a long hitter, but he's not, you know, none of them are really peewees on the European tour. But this guy apparently was pumping his freewards 10, 15 yards past Jordan Smith's driver. Nice. They're saying he's coming out and he's absolutely and he's not like a big butch guy. He's just quite tall and he's just got levers like you could die for.
Cameron Champ.
Yeah, honestly, it's they reckon that he's going to be like a bit of a star.
Love it, love
but,
it.
Ortegi's my man. Come on.
But
all right, cool. So we've got Sam, Andy Sullivan, Matt. What's his name? Adrian.
You can say what you want.
AD.
Yeah.
AD Ortegi.
AD.
Just Mr. Ortegi. Mr. Ortegi's fine.
Yeah, it'll be what it was. And me, JT Poston. And we have got a guest. I am currently waiting for a reply from Isaac Vesey, who I agreed with him last week that it was his pick because he just missed out by about 2 milliseconds last week. And I'm sure he's thinking up someone good at the moment. I hope he doesn't text me back in 5 minutes with Andy Sullivan, Adrian Ortegi, or JT Poston. But whoever it is, he will take the guest pick. The scores on the doors at the moment are Matt with 6, Joe with 5, Sam with 3, guest with 2. And that's about us for the week.
I thought I was on 7.
No, you're not on 7. You, I said 1 week you was on 5 and you was actually on 6, or I thought I had. But you haven't got 7 yet.
Do you know what I'm going to do tomorrow? I'm going to sit and listen to every single Swingers Club podcast.
To be fair, that's good news because we could do a few listens.
up the numbers. Do you want me to leave a review every time?
Yeah, please. And on that note, I want to just make that point against the guys. I know it's a bit cringe, but I'm going to do it anyway. Can you please make the little bit of effort to give us a rating on Apple or Spotify and leave us a review? Because it makes a massive difference to all the algorithms and stuff that we don't really understand.
Yeah. And also, we know how many people listen and we know how many reviews we've got, and that number don't match up. And if it doesn't start... If it doesn't start to match up soon, we are going to start coming for people.
Yeah, exactly that. But on the flip side, we love you all, guys. We appreciate it. And we'll speak to you next week.